right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. I'm Bryce, as always, joined by Mr. Brendan. How you doing, brother?
We are doing great over here. It's another great day in cryptocurrency. And man, we're back, baby.
We're back. No, this is going to be, you know, I always say these are high caliber, action packed episodes. This one's actually going to be truly high energy. This is a wonderful young gentleman who's joining us today, the co-founder of Movement Labs, Cooper Scanlon, who I had the pleasure of meeting in person, and I just couldn't get enough of it. So I said, you got to come back. We got to do a full length episode. So Cooper, thanks for joining us. And how are you doing?
Thanks for having me. And GMove, everyone. I'm doing great. We recently launched our testnet. We've made a lot of really cool announcements recently. Internally, are making a lot of improvements as well, and are going to be rolling out some really cool stuff pretty soon. So excited to cook with y'all again.
All right. Yeah, we're going to dive into that. And you know, before we do, I just want, for the folks who maybe didn't catch any of our earlier discussions, I would love for you just to share a little bit about your story and your background, kind of the come up of Cooper Scanlon from, if I remember, Ohio.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I grew up in the middle of nowhere. Like, it was the kind of place where chickens actually do cross the road. There's not any traffic. It's just, there's like one stop sign, the gas station. But the gas station, it had some of the best food. Like, they would make pizza, they'd make wings, they'd make hoagies. So like I was running that like every day. But throughout that, I kind of realized when I was like 16 that I'm pretty screwed. It's like, okay, this is not going to be the move long term. And there wasn't really any clear route to get out of that. Like, I'd been going, of course, like going to high school and whatnot, but it was never really in, like, this college thing, this career thing was never really ingrained. Like, I remember it wasn't until I started applying to colleges where they're like, submit SAT subject tests. And I was like, what the heck is that? Like, I thought the SAT is the SAT. You're telling me there's more stuff too? Like, just was genuinely like pretty clueless, but felt that immense stress and weight, like knowing I was in a bad situation, but not really having the understanding of the surroundings super well. So it was through that experience I became super finance oriented, because that was a pretty tangible thing. And it was always something that was, it was defining my life in a lot of ways. Whereas like I had to work full time, I had to take care of myself, I had to help my family pay bills. Like, it, throughout high school was just living with my dad. And so with that, I always was interested in investing in this concept of being able to make money with your existing money. But I generally have maybe like $20, 50 bucks on a good day in my bank account. So investing wasn't really a feasible option. I needed to use that money to like buy food. I needed to take care of myself with that. And so when I got to college, I started to be exposed more to technology and this concept of coding, which I found really interesting. Initially, I was really taken aback by it, because the only context that I would hear about coding is people would be like, yo, I got like a 40% on that. And it turns out that was like a good score in the class. So I was pretty like, what the heck? Like, shouldn't you be getting like hundreds? Shouldn't you be getting like good grades? And I was really scared initially, because of just like getting wrecked. And it's like, yo, like, you're going to trash my GPA. Like, what's going on here? But over time, started to get like more acclimated to this idea of technology being a really cool vehicle to go from zero to one without requiring a ton of capital. As well as like, there's this old saying that on the internet, no one knows you're a dog. And so likewise, in like looking at finance careers, it's like, okay, who do you know? What country club does your dad golf at? And what like VPs does he know? And it requires, even like once you get past that, it requires so much of like paying your dues and like 80 hour work weeks. And not just like an 80 hour work week when you're like, when you're doing it, like in this context is pretty manageable, but when you're doing it to make not your boss, not your boss's boss, but your boss's boss's boss, like way richer, and you're never gonna see, you're maybe getting like a penny of the work that you're putting in. Like that's just not, that's not really cool. As well as it's just not sustainable in like the current economy, where at one, you know, at one point way back when you could do, I mean, you'd be working minimum wage job, you'd get a house with like four bedrooms, you get a car, you'd be able to have a family. That's not really the case anymore. So it was like, it was doubly painful seeing not only are you expected to work excessive hours, not only are you putting in so much energy and time and you don't really have anything to show for it, but even with that, you're not even going to be able to have your own life. You're not going to be able to get your footing in the economy. So yeah, that it was very, I became very disillusioned with kind of what the opportunity, what the landscape looks like for Gen Z, for, I mean, even Gen Alpha people have it so much worse as well. And was like, okay, what's going to be my hope? Because ever since I was 16, I was wondering, like, what is going to be my golden ticket? What will be my saving grace to get out of this situation? And originally, you know, I wanted to be a company man. I envisioned myself having some form of safety and security under the umbrella of like a massive brand, a household name, being able to demonstrate my loyalty to something and being able to, you know, build a seat at the table through that way. But it really was a newsflash to me when I saw like all of the resources that exist, they've already been gobbled up by people looking decades before I was even born, right? So we looked, things looked really bleak for a while. Really, it was really, really tough for a while. But over time, you know, started to, as I learned more about technology, started learning more about blockchain and about cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. And found it as a really really cool intersection of finance and technology, where you'd be able to do all of the cool financial things that you dreamed of and do even more with technology and being able to program information, be able to program money. And with technology being the kind of place, like it doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter where you're from. It's the like the code, the technology, it speaks for itself in a lot of ways. And so being able to apply those two together, I found tremendously exciting, right? It's like magic entered the world once again, and there'd be opportunity. There would be the chance to build my own seat at the table and yeah, be able to make it. So I was originally working on a SPAC DAO vehicle. So the idea was that within venture capital, particularly for fund of funds, right? You want to have a more streamlined experience for the funds in your network, raising and deploying capital, as well as you can create a hub because it's traditionally a very, very illiquid space. But if you have KYC AML investors, and especially if you're under the umbrella of this fund of funds, then they should be able to communicate with each other. They should be able to trade and whatnot. So we were working on that together. And one of the major pain points was with the Solidity language. So honestly, it was frustrating all around. You know, I was annoyed that like, okay, this isn't really geared towards real world asset use cases. Like it feels like I'm writing wizardry. You know, the fund I was working with, they were annoyed because it's like, yo, like we don't know what the heck, like if you think it's wizardry for me, imagine how they're looking at it. It makes no sense.
And this is the coding language that Ethereum is built in, for those who've never heard of Solidity, right? And it's kind of an offbeat language, not like your JavaScript or C or something that's a little bit more commonplace.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, Solidity was a huge leap forward because before that, we didn't have smart contracts, right? But it's the kind of thing where when you're taking such a great leap forward, it's like we're progressing light years into the future. How likely is it that you're going to hit the bullseye? We're not even talking like degrees. It's like sub, very, very small, precision when you're looking at that level of a distance traveled in terms of like how far the difference. Like they say, if you travel, I don't know if it's from like New York to LA, but like if you change 1 degree, you end up in totally different places, right? It's kind of like that. where so like it served its purpose of being a, like demonstrating what is possible, but we've progressed so far as an industry, especially as we look towards more towards more use cases in which asset ownership is important, like RWA, like gaming, like consumer use cases. It just doesn't, it doesn't scale like that. It wasn't meant to scale. It was meant to demonstrate possibilities. And so, that was like, that was a pain point that we both were feeling. But then you look at the funds within their network, and it's like, if you think as a traditional, like, it hurts when I open my portfolio and it's like, I'm down 20%. Imagine how much it hurts when, like, it's not just your money, it's the money of your LPs and people who like to lose even less than you know, regular folk do. And so all in all, although we had a really powerful idea and something that it makes a lot of sense on paper, in practice, there were pain points at every step of the way and from every stakeholder within that. So as I was researching different languages to use, because around that time, right, we see like Solana doing stuff with Rust. And it's like, okay, for the first time, you can use different languages with blockchain. And around that time as well, Aptos and Sweet, they were making rounds. They were doing really big things, announcing massive rounds with huge investors. And it really felt like this kind of like Prince that was promised narrative of like, okay, we've like a language that was developed by Facebook, the best engineers, countless millions of dollars put into it. We have these huge backers. They're raising like some of the biggest rounds that like very I mean, each of these teams, they raised over $350 million a piece. So that's nearly $1 billion. Not just like, not even going into Move language, going into Aptos and Sweet after Move was developed. So it was really, really huge, really, really exciting. And when I looked into Move language, it not only solved like it solved all three of our problems. It was more intuitive for like me to build with in terms of what the actual code writing looks like, being similar to Rust and having just really clear pipelines in terms of where information flows to and from. Whereas Solidity, like it's kind of like things disappear into the ether and reappear in other places. And they might be in two places at once and they might get stolen along the way. With Move, it's much more just like physical objects. So it's way less of a headache, right, for like for firms that we work with to be able to read the code and be able to have an understanding of like, okay, this is what the functions do. Like, this is how the system works. But then also having significantly less vectors of attack than Solidity, right? It solves the reentrancy problem. It solves a lot of other common attack vectors as well. And additionally, having a built-in formal verification system where it's not auditing, right? You still need to get code audited to prove like that your logic works and that there's not huge breaks. But when you run the code as well, like internally, it's checking, it's making sure things are running smoothly and that there's not any funny business going on as well. And so that was huge, right? For fun, it would be huge for funds in the network as well. And realizing that Move, it not only like solved all three of our problems, but also created new use cases for RWA, that it expands beyond just what I was working on to gaming. It expands into DeFi. Like Move really solves a lot of the problems we face in terms of onboarding developers. It's easier to learn. Retaining developers because your contracts are going to be safer. You know, protecting funds. Giving peace of mind to your customers and whatnot, right? It really can come for everything. And so I really fell in love with this language, fell in love with the ecosystem and the community of Move developers, because it really felt like magic. All of us were in it together. Like the early days of the ecosystem, people were teaching others the language. We were troubleshooting in Telegram chats. Everyone, it didn't matter. Like there was no fighting for places in the ecosystem. We were really aligned in this. Like if we want to win, we have to band together. It's too early to cut up the pie. Like we just need to focus on growing it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was really cool to be a part of that, that sort of ecosystem. So I started building structured products in the Move language. So I was really interested in this concept of, like, if you want to invest on chain, the way to optimize your yield is to go across multiple different protocols. But that's a huge hassle. It's a pain to do. It's a pain to track what your APY is and being able to optimize that over time. And if you want to withdraw, or if, you know, heavens forbid, something bad happens to one of those protocols, it can create a lot of systemic risk in a way, like, your fingers aren't always fast enough if you're going through like three different front ends, three different protocols, waiting. I wanted to make it so that you could, with one click, be able to choose different strategies with your risk tolerance. And very importantly, you see your APY in real time. If you don't like it, you click one more button, you have your money back, and you can go put it somewhere else. So making it simple to invest in DeFi was really interesting to me in building consumer-oriented structured products with the Move language. And then in my experience with Move, loved the language, loved the community, but it was really difficult to onboard customers, onboard users, onboard liquidity, because Move blockchains, they launched one deep in a bear market. It was like after FTX happened, right? Not just after, like right after, right? Actually, it was like a week before FTX. So very brutal, very difficult situation, as well as with like this meta. Before, you could launch an L1 and it's like, line up, baby, right? In like 2021, we were seeing a lot of great runs, but that's been played out, right? And
yeah,
the people, right, if you're launching a new chain, now you're going head to head with all of the existing ones. And in a bear market, there's no new people coming, right? People are leaving and they're migrating into the biggest chains. So it was a very difficult, like, it's a very difficult culture problem to begin with for launching a new.
And I want to go back to the kind of like problems that you saw with Solidity and the way that blockchains were done previously, because you talked about a couple of the problems that you saw, whether it was like safety and security and liquidity and organization for coders and all this stuff. But I guess what interested you the most with Move that made you kind of think, hey, we've got to change the way that we're doing this?
I'd really say it's that intersection, that It's not just making one benefit. I wouldn't point to any one specific category. I think they're all very important, right? Being easy to learn, it means you see fastest growing developer rates in places like Vietnam, places like Bangalore, where you have a lot of your hungriest folks. They're getting plugged into the internet. They're looking to completely leapfrog this kind of financial system that the people have been born into, and be able to find freedom for themselves. I think that's how we onboard the next 1,000, the next 10,000 developers for the industry. Looking at security, right? Every other week, a protocol is being drained of tens of millions of dollars that cannot scale. So it just makes sense to be using more secure smart contracts as well. And in addition, being able to empower the use cases, right? Facebook designed this. They had in mind, we're going to onboard our big finance friends, our big tech friends. We're going Libra. To use this for consumer applications. So it really fires on all cylinders. And that's what inspired me. Like, okay, I'm going to quit my really good internship. I'm going to drop out of college. I'm just going to go all in on this Move language. Because it's not just making like one single bet. It's making like really stacking and really like strongly intersecting bets all on this one Move language.
And so if we kind of take a look at something like Sui or Aptos, they kind of burst onto the scene. They had this new Move language. At a really high level, you know, what is the end user experience that's different than just Ethereum? Is it just that we have, you know, more, you know, security and quicker speeds, or is there something more fundamental that's going on?
Yeah, so I think from the user experience, I think it should be as abstracted away as possible, where you shouldn't know the rails that you're working on. You should just be able to benefit from the performance and the security. So yes, Move has faster TPS because it can process transactions in parallel. As well as, yes, part of the user experience is the lack of experience of getting your money stolen. You don't have to worry about that thing anymore. But I think that we'll see new use cases empowered by the Move language. For example, we have this really cool team called Henry, that's essentially building Honey on Web3. And what's interesting about that is they're able to create very consumer-oriented products, as well as you see games being developed, such as Infinite Seas, where apart from Move, they have a really cool model where their in-game economy is powered by like an AMM. So that's like just fundamentally interesting for a game. But what it will look like for that is just, it's more streamlined for the developer to build these consumer-oriented things. It enables them to build out use cases and build out things for their end user that might not be possible or might be more difficult to do with Solidity. But a lot of the streamlines, they're happening under the hood. And they're happening, like, they're decreasing the amount of developer hours it takes to build applications, decreasing the amount of costs and the amount of time spent auditing, making it just like devs are going to be happier. They're going to be like, okay, this makes so much more sense. Instead of doing like 20 steps, they can do 4 or 5. And then for the end user, they just get to benefit from a streamlined product and just be none the wiser. Like I like to just be on my iPhone. I like to press the buttons and stuff. I don't want to know what's underneath there. Like,
and there's going to be more applications because if you have all the developers that are just, you know, churning out more applications and more research, the end user is just eventually just going to have access to better products over time. So it sounds super exciting. And, you know, it sounds like you also won't have to, like in Ethereum, bridge things back and forth to Optimism and Arbitrum and Base and Ethereum, where I think I saw Vitalik Buterin, who founded Ethereum, he said that, you know, he wants eventually in the near term to like obfuscate away all of that bridging. So it's just, you're just feeling like you're on Ethereum. And then Solana doesn't even have any bridging or anything like that. Do you see a world where we could actually combine Solana and Sui and Aptos and Ethereum, and we could just move money around and it could be on all of those blockchains? And you don't even really have to know which blockchain you're on. You're just moving your money where you want it.
Yeah, I think that's a vision of a better world, right? Especially with Ethereum being the cultural hub of crypto, with Solana also being a major cultural hub. The fragmentation, right? That's something we experienced as Move builders, where it's really difficult to onboard folks because of what the opposite of what you described, where it's a very fragmented ecosystem. So to be able to just agnostically experience Web3, and really, like, I think a good user experience requires the user to know as little as possible of what's going on. If I want to buy, like, if I want to buy a token on Solana, I shouldn't need to know that it's on Solana. If I want to buy a token on Ethereum, I shouldn't need to know it's on Ethereum. I should just be like, I want to buy this token. I go and buy this token. So I think that would be a much better user experience for Web3. And our vision is that Move will be everywhere, and Move can be this unifying factor for folks no matter on what chain you're on. And that's kicking off with Ethereum, as well as, of course, kicking off with our partnership with Polygon and using the AG layer that makes that seamless user experience possible on top of Ethereum. And our vision is that, like, as we keep cooking, as we keep developing, right, as we build out our products, we'll be able to see that experience expanded to more ecosystems and be able to grow this tent, welcoming everyone under it to get to use Move and get to use it in a seamless and unified manner.
Awesome. Yeah. And what's kind of next at Movement? What's something that you're working on? I saw that there was a big announcement recently. The test net has been going and kind of churning. And then you already have 160 million in TVL. Tell us a little bit more about what's upcoming and what's recent.
Yeah, for sure. So we were so excited to launch Testnet. And in a lot of ways, we were quite stressed out as well. Because when you launch a Testnet, like, your number one fear, right, is kind of like launching a party. You want to make sure that you've got people coming. Because you don't want to launch a Testnet and there be nothing to do. That's like the biggest nightmare ever. And so when we ended up launching this testnet, ended up being quite the opposite. Day one, we had about 30 protocols that were live. We had over 300 different quests for people to do. And the way that we were initially thinking of it is like, okay, let's firstly drop all of the puzzle pieces on the table so that one, people can put them together as they see fit. It's really like a choose your own adventure. as well as that, we're just optimizing. We want to grow this as much as possible by getting applications deployed, getting quality front ends deployed, and then each of these applications giving people things to do. Because when you think about it, it's not just an opportunity, like it's not just movement, right? But you also have applications each doing their own test nets at the same time. So it's a great way for anyone to get exposure to the network, to get exposure to applications, and then when the time comes, get recognized by each of them. And then what we realized in practice is that if you're like brand new to Web3, and that's something that's a group that's really important to us, because the Move language was developed for these folks, as well as that's our vision to onboard people into Web3 and create just a better user experience, right? If you open up this testnet, you see 30 different applications, you see 300 different things to do, you can be pretty overwhelmed. It's like being dropped in the middle of the ocean. And so we've been cooking so much, particularly on like a V2 testnet experience, where for people who want just a more structured, be able to look at, let's say, 30 things instead of 300 things, then they can do so and have a very simple experience to see what some of the best that we have to offer within the ecosystem, and be able to do so in a way that I think is going to be really reminiscent of RPGs that a lot of us may have played growing up. And I think it's going to be a really, really cool experience. So what was important to us as well in this creation of Testnet is that you have two different games that's being played. So you have a short-term game where when you think of Testnet, it's your traditional, like, okay, it has a start, it has an end. In the period, you're doing certain things in which you're earning points or some other system. And at the end of it, you're going to be judged. You're going to be rewarded based on the points that you have. And then the game ends. You did the thing. But you also have this longer term game. It's something that's very dear to us. It draws into the name movement itself, that this doesn't just stop at mainnet, right? The vision here is that people are going to be able to build their own seats at the table, and that the short term game of testnet, it's like you should be able to take those, you should wear it like a medal or like a trophy that you can take to applications building on top of us and be like, look, I am a rock star creator. I am really good at making memes or making art. And so these people should be able to find work and find recognition at applications within our ecosystem. And that's true for each of the different guilds, which we've identified, whether you make art and memes, whether you want to be a community moderator, whether you're an on-chain degen, you want to write content, you want to write guides, or even just like inviting people, doing referral type stuff and engaging with content on Twitter or YouTube, kind of being that energy. There is a place for everyone. There is a clear path in which you can be rewarded. And that works on a short-term game, right, where we can define a start and an end. But what we're really excited by is that it continues onward. So people are getting moderator positions at movement and in ecosystem applications. They're getting hired. We've hired some people from our community. Applications are hiring people from our community as well. And so there's an alignment between this game as well, where what you do in the short term can contribute to what you do in the long term, where that's ultimately the vision that we have for folks. And so now what we're doing, the short term game originally is like, okay, here's 300 puzzle pieces, put them together how you want to. It's like, we can do better. We can define a 30 piece puzzle for people to put together and feel confident that they've contributed in some capacity. They know where they stand. They're not going to feel pressured like, oh, I have to do all 300 of these things. And yeah, it's
it's not as overwhelming, right?
Exactly. So we're going to not only make it less overwhelming, but it's also like, if you've played World of Warcraft, you're going to have a lot of nostalgia,
yeah,
I think. So I'm just genuinely stoked for that next, like this phase two of Testnet and what we're going to be rolling out for folks. And then, of course, that ties into the mainnet, where we've been approached by a few folks. Namely, we have close partnerships with Solve BTC, as well as 280 Capital, who's been a tremendous supporter, tremendous backer of ours opened a lot of doors for us, is now supporting a lot of people within our ecosystem and taking that a step further by supporting applications in the ecosystem with liquidity as well. And so it really demonstrates the excitement that we have, right? Both from like really esteemed investors with incredibly deep roots, especially throughout Asia, and then also major protocols, right? Such as Solve BTC, in which you have BTC folks who are holding it because it's the safest asset and they want to earn yield on it, because who can say no to that? But if you're putting that into Solidity contracts, you're opening yourself up to an entirely new attack vector where all of your BTC can just get stolen from you like that. And so overwhelmingly, right, they're looking at Move language to be able to deposit Bitcoin on and be able to have that double security and peace of mind. And of course, right, we're a new network. There's a lot of opportunities in the early days, which folks who are, right, of course, early liquidity providers, early backers, even early traders, of course, when the network goes live, are going to be able, of course, to, you know, build a seat.
Yeah, and I want to go back to the topic of gaming, because it seems like you're a fan of the gaming ecosystem, and I am as well. But I'm curious what your thoughts on the current state of blockchain gaming and what's happening over there. Because again, I'm a fan of it, but it seems like, you know, gaming specifically when it comes to the blockchain side is in a little bit of a rut right now. And I say that because maybe it's just people had false expectations, right? I think there was kind of this false picture painted, and it's like everything's going to be blockchain gaming in 3 years' time. And from the inception of it, or from when it got popular a few years ago. And now people are like, why isn't all the latest AAA games built on blockchain yet? It's like, well, I think, at least in my opinion, and I want to toss it back to you, but the kind of the way that I view it is that there hasn't been proper large scale infrastructure set up. There hasn't been a reliability factor in some of this other stuff. And I think that's what some of the bigger players have been waiting on. So, again, I want to pass it back to you. You seem really passionate about this space and you have a good understanding of what's going on and probably some of the stuff that the industry needs.
Yeah, that's a really good point as well. So when I think of blockchain gaming, what excites me the most about it is this composability of assets. So over COVID, I was playing Modern Warfare, playing Warzone like every day. And that was the first like COD game that I got the mastery camo. I got Damascus for getting gold on all of the guns. And it would be really cool if in future COD games, I would be able to take that Damascus with me or be able to showcase like I made this achievement. And that's part of why, you know, when a new Call of Duty game came out, I was like, okay, I don't really want to buy this. Like, I have the mastery camo here. I feel bought in. I did the thing. And
yeah, you got to start over.
Yeah, I got to decide. I'm not really feeling that. I think that it's really difficult for blockchain games to compete with these AAA folks. Like you said, I'm not as like tapped into what AAA gaming infrastructure looks like. But from the user experience and that side of things, I think that one of the use cases that blockchain really empowers is this like micropayments and being able to have many, many transactions at the same time. But like, honest, I guess I'll play devil's advocate here. Imagine like EA or Activision, they get their hands on this. It's already a hellscape of microtransactions in AAA games. Who knows what it could look like if they get their hands.
We don't know what kind of beast we're going to unlock.
yeah. And from the blockchain gaming side, it's like those things where like finance is kind of like people are turned off by that now in a lot of ways. So it's really difficult to compete with AAA games, right? How are you going to build Elden Ring on chain? And until you're able to do that, if I can play Elden Ring and like new DLC drops, like that's where I'm going to be, you know?
Yeah.
One thing I think is cool within the blockchain space, like again, to highlight Infinite Seas, being able to have an in-game economy that is like having the economy powered by blockchain by implementing like a native AMM model with how resources are priced and traded. I think that's really cool. And I think that can be used to create a more immersive experience in a way that doesn't turn off the end user. But I think one of the more difficult things is going to be breaking out of this, like, look, dude, if I can play a AAA game that I can play for 200 hours and is like a masterpiece, right? How is a game that's like, how are you going to compete with that? I think is my biggest question.
Yeah. Well, do you think it's possible to have a AAA game that's powered by traditional means, but the economy or the in-game items, like you said, to be powered by blockchain? Like, can we have a hybrid model where the game itself is like centrally powered and ran, and then the economy behind the game, you know, think like a CSGO economy or any kind of economy that has these large amounts of in-game items, where that is decentrally powered?
I think you struck gold there. That makes a lot of sense, right? Like criticisms with like the Steam store, to truly own those assets, be able to take them elsewhere, do what you want with it. So I think that's one of the cool use cases of blockchain, that it allows, especially with move language, it allows things to exist in themselves. That is to say, like, you're like my Damascus camo, it only exists in the context of Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2019 servers. It only exists on my account that's tied to, you know, whatever. So, yeah, I think that would be a very interesting model to see abstracted and much more user friendly. But I wonder because like Valve's making a killing on their store. What would ever encourage like someone who owns that to do?
What I would think is that they kind of like what we saw with NFTs, where the owner gets primary and secondary royalties. So they get the royalty from the initial sale, and they're going to get that anyway. They already get that. I think the benefit is that they would then get a reoccurring percentage of every time it's sold after, even on third parties. And that seems to be the issue with a lot of these games, is that people realize that they could have more freedoms like the blockchain world offers by going through third parties. The difference here is that if all these in-game items are a form of a non-fungible token, not in the sense of like a JPEG way, but in the literal sense of how non-fungible tokens and NFTs can be used, that they would get primary and secondary sales guaranteed, because it's built into the code to send a percentage of every time it's transacted back to a specific wallet. And so for me, that's where I look at it from like a beneficial or from a beneficial standpoint, and say they're guaranteed to not lose out on those secondary sales, which they are currently losing out on.
Interesting. Yeah. That's pretty crazy. I want to get to how our audience could get involved. And I know you guys have something that's going on called the Olympus or the Battle of Olympus Hackathon. So I want to cover this as well as kind of as we wrap things up. You know, how can our users who are listening today get involved with everything that you guys are doing?
For sure. So if you're a developer, or even if you're a first time dev, Battle of Olympus is a great place for you. We've had over 1,000 teams sign up for it, 75% of which are brand new. And we have a lot of guides of how to go from 0 to 1 with Move. We're making guides for like the different verticals and different categories that you can compete in, how to make a simple application on that front. And that's a really good way to participate in the network and to qualify for all of that fun stuff via Battle of Olympus. And then if you're not a developer, not interested in developing, that's where testnet.movementlabs.xyz are building the Parthenon Hackathon comes in. So like, as I mentioned, we have 5 different guilds, each of which has a different specialty and expertise. And you can do the things that interest you, right? So each of these is a specific track. It's a specific bucket. And so when you're completing, like, you don't have to think of it in terms of like, oh, I'm being judged based on 300 things. Each guild is its own bucket. And so it's more of an internal thing. So you can play the games that you want to play, and you don't have to worry that like you don't have any exposure in one of the other games, right? You're not going to be judged based on that. You only have to worry about that if you're an overachiever and you're like, I want to do every single thing. I want to be pulling from every single bucket here. And then there's another bucket where we're thinking just of transactions on chain. So even if you don't want to do any quests, you don't like that model, you can just play around with the chain and we'll see that. We'll recognize that. So that's the main way right now to get involved is to head over to our testnet, start questing, right? You can check out our Twitter as well, where you can join our Discord. We have a really active community with some really awesome folks called Gorilla Movers as well, where this emerged or completely organically and spontaneously within our community, where some just real legends, they were like, okay, we self-select ourselves as the most active and engaged folks on the movement. And they made a community around that, where if you want to be a part of the community, like being recognized by the gorillas is, it's honestly like the coolest thing ever, right? And they have different levels within their structure as well, all the way up to silverbacks, which make, like, you are an OG, you are a massive contributor to the ecosystem. And that's something that we see as well, and something that we're going to be paying very, very close attention to. Because what's really important to add, like to stress here, is that our testnet experience, it's not just an on-chain experience. There's a lot that happens off-chain as well. And by being a part of this movement, that's what we're looking for, mm-hmm. right? We're not looking for, okay, who's done 5 million transactions, and that's how we're going to, that's the lens in which we're going to look at things. We're looking at it way more of like, we want to empower real humans and real people to build a seat at the table, be a part of a community, and that be the way that the game is played. So really, really highly recommend hopping in the Discord, asking around, chatting with other people. Look out for folks who have the Gorilla Movers role, because they're really great members of the community, all like super chill, really nice people, as well as like everyone's, you know, looking to optimize their experience with the testnet and doing all of the types of things. So lots of folks that can help guide you as well, because as of right now, there are still so many applications, so many quests to do. And yeah, like that's why you have a community, you have an ecosystem.
Absolutely. It sounds like a place that's just a lot of fun and a lot of learning. And I think it sounds like a really awesome opportunity for all Crypto 101 listeners, not only to just learn more about crypto, and but really through a gamified approach. So Cooper, we can't, you know, thank you enough for coming on and talking to us all about Movement Labs and everything that you guys got going on. And everybody who's watching at home, take a look into the show notes. We will have links to all of those places that Cooper directed us towards for you to get involved. And hopefully some of you guys, you hop in their channels, become a silverback gorilla, and make a big splash and let them know you came from Crypto 101. Cooper, thank you so much for hopping on with us.
Hell yeah. Thank you guys. This is a blast.
Awesome. All right, everybody, stay tuned. We got some more incredible founders and guests coming up in just a week. Come back same time, same place, and we'll be here. Thanks, guys.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.